We all assume that public research and innovation has a critical role in technological progress, but how much detail do we really know about its macroeconomic impact? Now a European research project is trying to fill this gap in our knowledge. Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of interviews with the world's leading economists. My name is Tim Phillips. Since 2017, the FRAME project has been investigating how knowledge from the public domain translates into innovation and economic growth. It's doing this by creating new economic models and analyses, which link innovation policies to outcomes such as productivity, output, job creation, and unemployment. Today I'm joined from Dartmouth College by Diego Comming, one of the leaders of the project. Diego, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hi, Tim.
Why is FRAME focusing specifically on public policy for innovation rather than innovation in general?
At FRAME, we also look at the private sector companies, but we also felt that we knew relatively little about the foundations of public innovation policies. And in particular, we knew little about why the government sometimes it's directly involved into the innovation process. People have the notion that innovation is best left for private agents, and yet many of the most important innovations that we have seen in the last century or century and a half have been the result of the public sector. And so we wanted to understand that better, both from a descriptive perspective as well as from a normative standpoint.
Is the focus on accelerating the production of new knowledge, or is it about how that knowledge is applied?
Again, both of them. So we are interested in understanding how new technologies are developed, but much of the literature has ignored the fact that it takes a while for the diffusion of new technologies once they have been invented. And we think that that's very important for a variety of reasons. One of them being that if it takes a long time for a technology to diffuse, that's going to be affecting the value for the innovator of developing that technology, and therefore it should be taken into account. In addition, for example, the speed of diffusion of technologies is very procyclical. And so in order to understand how the diffusion process impacts business cycle dynamics for the economy, you have to take into account technology diffusion.
I note you're EU funded. Now, is this because EU governments and firms are being out-innovated by firms in the US or China, for example?
That was not exactly our motivation. I think that the issues that we're studying are relevant for almost any country, both in rich as well as in poor countries. So I think that there are a variety of aspects that are general, and then we are paying some attention to some aspects that are more European specific. So, for example, we are interested in understanding the drivers of unemployment during the Great Recession, and that obviously it's something that it's very relevant in certain countries in Europe. And we're also studying the innovation systems of some countries in Europe, not just because they are in Europe, but because they are particularly attractive and they highlight, they present quite nicely this tension that I was pointing at the beginning about a direct involvement of the government in developing innovations.
Who's doing this research and what sort of models are you building?
FRAME is basically a result of the efforts of a consortia of universities and research centers in Europe, which involve in particular University Pompeu Fabra in Barcelona, Bocconi University in Milan, ZW in Mannheim, Lund University in Sweden, CPR and LBS in London. And then within each of these centers, there is a few researchers that are directly involved, as well as some administrators.
I see that some of the models are DSGE models. It seems odd to think about innovation in terms of general equilibrium.
I think that's a great question. So there are a couple of features that I think make FRAME or the approach that we have pursued in FRAME quite cool. For some of the work packages of the projects that we're working, we are building on a unified framework of models, as you say, DSG models that have traditionally been used to study macroeconomic policies and business cycles that have been modified. You know, we have put them on steroids, basically to allow for a reasonable and very realistic notion of technology in the economy. And so basically these technologies that ultimately affect the productive capacity of the economy are the result of voluntary actions by companies that invest in developing the technologies. And then at the second phase, agents need to adopt these technologies in order to make them productive. And so that process of invention and adoption generates, on the one hand, a mechanism by which productivity growth in the long run, but on the other, it generates a reasonable and realistic adoption lag that, like in the data, varies over the business cycle. And so that's, I think, a good way to think about innovation, because at the end of the day, what you want is to understand the consequences of innovation, not just for the long run, but also for the medium term, okay? When people talk about the drivers of welfare, they don't think about what happens in 100 years. They think about what's going to happen in the next decade, the next 5 to 15 years. And these type of models are models that are very good at providing a good characterization of transitional dynamics over those frequencies. On top of that, we are using other models that are more standard. So for example, to look at the drivers of unemployment, we're using standard Mortensen and Pisaides search and matching models. So we are not just married to one class of models, but we tend to look for the model that is more appropriate for the question that we are trying to answer.
In the past, many macroeconomic models just consider technology as the thing that created growth. More recently, there's been a stream of academic research into innovation and its effect on growth. So how does FRAME distinguish itself from the work that's already being done?
Well, I think that it very much shares the view that technology is not manna from heaven. It's the result of innovation activity. It recognizes, though, that innovation activity in turn is affected by current economic conditions. And so in the same way that technology doesn't come from heaven, innovation is not immune to the situation of the economy. And the same thing happens with this rate of diffusion of technologies, the adoption activities by companies. Those are highly cyclical. And so those two tenets are at the core of FRAME. And so that view is not a new view, but it's a view that still, I wouldn't say it's mainstream, because as you know, in macroeconomics, there's been a traditional dichotomy between a long-run models that study innovation and growth, and short-run models of business cycles fluctuations that basically abstract from technology and take it as either fixed or as exogenous. And so in reality, those two views of the world, which seem contradictory, are glimpses on the same economy, and therefore they should be made consistent. And so the models that we're using in FRAME are models that bridge the gap between traditional short-run models of business cycles and traditional endogenous growth models of the long run.
What's the audience for your output?
That's a great question. I'm not sure we have a great answer for that. So basically, the audience is whoever is interested into this class of models, as well as on this broad set of issues. So let me give you an example. One thing that we are discovering is that fluctuations in risk premium are very important to understand the drivers of future TFP growth and the dynamics of asset prices. So a natural audience is professionals of finance, okay? So, many years ago, I was giving a talk to, you know, businessmen in Barcelona in Spain. And after the talk, the people that were most interested about these topics, the people that were most interested in learning more about this were the professional investors, because they saw that this was providing a better characterization of stock prices and stock returns than the models that they were using at the time. Obviously, these issues are fundamental for the proper design of macroeconomic models for policy evaluation. And so from that perspective, policymakers, central bankers are a very natural audience. But I think that some of the issues that we study are relevant for companies too and for a public organization. So some of the research we have conducted helps public organizations that are directly involved in innovation activity estimate the impact of their activities on the performance of companies that they interact with. And so from that perspective, those organizations have been very keen, after a little bit of negotiation, to learn about how good they are.
Clearly, if you can make money for finance professionals, they're going to listen to you. But how do you know that the rest of your audience is listening?
Well, I mean, those things often you realize ex post, like when somebody comes and say, look, many years ago, I read this paper of you, I saw that clip or I talked to that person, and that was like so important for me. I mean, these things are hard to see in real time. One thing that I can tell you is that our work with Fraunhofer in particular, it's something that I know they have valued a lot. And so that's something that has happened within the context of Frame, and it's something that I know they wanted to use in the future to secure public financing, as well as to publicize the good policies of the Merkel governments in Germany, looking at the German election.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the work you have done with Fraunhofer Gesellschaft, and also a little bit about what it is for people who don't know about it?
So Fraunhofer is a very cool organization. It motivates many of the questions that we are asking and connects quite nicely to the reason why we are studying public innovation policy. So basically, Fraunhofer is this big applied research organization. Its budget is over 2 billion euros. They have been around since 1949, and they employ over 20,000 physicists and engineers that do research. They develop about 500 patents every year. They are one of the most successful research organizations in the world. You know, for example, I mean, they are famous because scientists in Fraunhofer invented the MP3. They have invented or developed prototypes, for example, for determining whether the ball goes inside the goal in soccer. They have basically 60 institutes around Germany, each of them specializing in one field of science or engineering. So they cover all of the areas of science that we know of, and they are great from a technical standpoint. Now, what I think is fantastic about them is not just that. What I think is incredible is that in addition to doing R&D, they also try to solve the technological problems of specific companies. And so if I'm a small company in Germany and I have a technological problem that the solution is not provided in the market because, say, it's not a standard problem for which I can take an off-the-shelf software or machine to fix, then I will go to Fraunhofer. And Fraunhofer will use the knowledge they have accumulated through their many years of research and development efforts to solve my specific problem. So what we have done is Fraunhofer had the notion that the research contract was very successful. They help every year around 8,000 companies in different ways. And their narrative is that they are one of the reasons why German small and medium-sized companies are able to compete in the global market economy. Of course, that's a notion that is based on the way they tell their own story. So there's been no effort to quantify that notion. And so for many years, I've tried to get in touch with Fraunhofer and get access to this compendium of research contracts that they have signed with companies in order to measure what's the effect on the performance of companies of interacting with Fraunhofer. So initially, you know, they were not extremely excited with the idea because they didn't see any upside to it. But then, as interestingly, as the world was going into a period over which the line between what's real and what's fake was becoming more blur, they developed, I think, an interest in really documenting that they are a good organization. And so they became, they're interesting. And so in the context of Frame, we're able to create this consortium. They allow us, you know, we had to sign many confidential agreements about the transfer of the data. The data was brought by train from Munich to Mannheim in a hard drive, and we created this mechanism that satisfied their very stringent criteria that allow us to basically have their confidential data on who has been engaged with Fraunhofer in the last 20 years and on what capacity. And then we match that data with publicly available data sources about the performance of German companies. And so what that allows us to have is on the one hand, information on who Fraunhofer works with, and on the other, information on the performance of these companies. You know, we have used state-of-the-art econometric techniques to estimate what's the effect that Fraunhofer has on companies, and we have seen that indeed they have great effects on companies. Interacting with Fraunhofer leads to an increase in sales by about 10%. This increase is very protracted in time. As you interact more with Fraunhofer, the increase goes up over time. It tends to persist for a number of years. It's not just sales, it's employment, it's value added, it's productivity. Companies tend to become more technologically sophisticated. After interacting with Fraunhofer, they tend to hire more high-skilled workers. They tend to pay workers on average more after interacting with Fraunhofer and so on and so forth. So it seems that working with Fraunhofer puts companies on a different trajectory towards providing higher value added and relying more on state-of-the-art technologies. And so this is just one example about the speed of Frame, which is identify something that, according to economic theory, should never have existed, like Fraunhofer. You know, according to economic theory, we can reach the first best, the optimal innovation policy, with just R&D subsidies. And then there you have a big organization, one of the most important ones in the world, that goes way beyond just subsidizing R&D. It has the public sector directly involved in doing R&D and then involved in providing specific technological solutions to individual companies. And so we wanted to understand why Fraunhofer exists and what's it, the consequences that having a Fraunhofer in your company has on your economy. And so to that extent, you know, we have been able to measure for the first time the impact that Fraunhofer has on German companies.
The Frame funding runs until March 2019. What are you going to do then, Diego? Are you going to go back to your other work?
I think we will take a little break after 2019. No, seriously, I think that Frame was an excuse of a group of friends that were interested in a series of very cool projects to obtain the resources to implement them. These are things that we're thinking of doing for a long time, and I think that we'll continue working on these type of issues after the project has formally finalized. So in that sense, I don't think that March of 2019 is particularly marking right in our calendars. We are interested, very interested in these issues. They are deep issues. They are fundamental for the well-being of citizens in Europe and generally around the world. And so I don't think that with Frame is going to end our curiosity in these research topics.
Diego, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tim.
If you're interested in the case study of Fraunhofer Gesellschaft that we discussed, Diego Comín has written a column for VoxEU about it called Publicly Funded Research Pays Off. Or if you want to find out more about Frame, go to your browser, type in www.h2020frame.eu, and you can find out a lot more about the background of the project and the work they've been doing. This has been a Vox Talk presented by the Center for Economic Policy Research. You can find us on all the major podcast platforms or at voxeu.org/vox-talks.